Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Hey, we got some big headlines for November 6th for football history headlines. The first collegiate game is considered by many to be played in the state. The first NFL game played under the lights. And we have a team kicked out of school for eating too much fudge. These stories and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. We are going to study some great days of football, many of them. We talk about all 366 days of the year during leap year. But November 6th really has a special spot because by many, it is considered the very first intercollegiate football game in the United States. It happened on November 6, 1869. The College of New Jersey, that later became known as Princeton, and Rutgers University played each other in a football match. This information comes from the PrincetonTigersFootball.com. And the word match should be a clue to all that this game is not recognizable in our era as being a game of American football that we know and love. The game was played using a round-shaped ball, and they used Football Association, or better known as soccer rules, but the style of play closely resembled rugby. This game marked the beginning of intercollegiate football and subsequently has gone down in the history books as the first American college football game. The contest ended in Rutgers' win as they scored 6 runs to Princeton's 4. Now, the object of the game is to score goals like you do in soccer. The first team to 6 would win that game, and that's why the score was 6-4. 2 weeks later, after the inaugural game, Princeton handed Rutgers its very first loss, 8-0, and both Rutgers and Princeton were retroactively awarded the 1869 National Championship game because they were the only two teams that played that year. They played their 2 games. They were supposed to have a third game rubber match to determine who the winner was, but that game, it never came to fruition. So only those 2 games, one by each school. Now, we have a very interesting story that happened in 1903. The Racine 11 were dismissed. Fun fact about the Racines football team was that in 1903, the program ended for what we would look at today as the oddest of circumstances. A November 6, 1903 article from the Champaign, Illinois Daily Gazette posts the headline of "Bounced for Eating Fudges, Football Team of Racine Gets Its Walking Papers." Yes, the entire football team was discharged, allegedly because the players were caught eating fudge, which in the eyes of the school administration was thought to make them very poor students and athletes. Thank God that same criteria isn't used for your friendly blog writer and podcast providers, because this guy would be out, because I like to eat the fudge. And for more on some Racine College football history, go to our story from May 30th in the May 30th football history headlines. Now, the game was under the lights for the very first time also on this date in November 26, 1929. Providence, Rhode Island, just days after the 1929 stock market crash, signaling the start of the Great Depression, the Providence Steamroller became the very first NFL team granted permission by the NFL to host a game on night under floodlights and they scheduled it in the Cyclodrome in Providence. The Steamrollers enjoyed success in the season before, as they won the 1928 National Championship, but multiple players had left for better-paying jobs before the 1929 season, so a gimmick, such as a night game, might just do the trick to bring paying fans into the stands. The highest-paid man on the team was Jimmy Konzelman, who doubled as a quarterback and coach, and with a $292 per game salary. Due to the heavy flooding at the Cyclodrome, the game against the Chicago Cardinals was moved to Kinsley Park so as not to lose the revenue. The portable floodlights were moved to Kinsley too, and the first NFL night game was played. The Steamroller, well, they lost by a score of 0-16, but were satisfied that over 6,000 fans attended after a season low attendance. In 1930, the floodlights were permanently installed at the Cyclodrome, but the players received a pay reduction for the night games to help pay for the cost of the floodlight installation. Learn more here from this. The St. Louis Gunners. Well, in November 6, 1934, the NFL finally approved the sale of the Cincinnati Reds football team to a St. Louis group for approximately $25,000. And in 1933 of the NFL, a certain amount of stability had risen in the league. Or at least so everybody thought. The Cincinnati Reds football franchise was in trouble due to financial woes, but a group in St. Louis, prior to the start of the games, offered to buy the team. The other NFL owners rejected this idea, feeling that St. Louis was too far west to be in the league. However, as the Reds got further into the season, things got worse. The NFL was facing an embarrassing situation with a team folding mid-season. So finally, after weeks of negotiating, the NFL allowed the sale according to a paper submitted to the PFRA by Bob Gill on the St. Louis Gunners team. The St. Louis Gunners took over the Reds roster and played a partial 1934 schedule. The backstory on the Gunners was really well told by Gill's transcript and basically tells us that after some failed pro teams in St. Louis, the 1931 the Field Artillery of the National Guard of Battery A announced it would sponsor the team for the upcoming season in the city. The team was promptly referred to as the Batter A Gunners from its association with the Guard. The team had a big signing in its naming its head coach, the famous pro star and future Hall of Famer Jimmy Konzelman. Then after securing Public School Stadium as a home field, the Gunners were ready to open for business. The NFL couldn't be happier as they were waiting in the wings, and the Reds franchise was then bought out and the Gunners were part of the NFL. They won their first game against the Pittsburgh Pirates 6-0, but then lost the last two to the Detroit Lions 40-7 and the Green Bay Packers 21-14. The Gunners franchise in the NFL lasted only those three games in 1934, but remember, there was a team that only played 1.5 games, and that's the shortest. And then remember we talked with Ken Crippen about them, the Tonawanda Kardex Lumbermen. So the Gunners, well, they're the second shortest history in the NFL with their three games. Well, Art Modell made an announcement on November 6, 1995, as he officially announced that his Cleveland Browns franchise was moving to Baltimore. The city of Cleveland would later be learned to retain the Browns name, so Modell's franchise would have to go on to become the Ravens, thanks to OnThisDay.com. The SEC adds another school in the state in November 6, 2011, as the Southeastern Conference welcomed the University of Missouri into their Conference of Collegiate Athletics. Missouri officially entered the SEC on July 1, 2012, along with Texas A&M, according to the SEC's official website. They completed their first year of competition in the SEC in the school year of 2012-2013. Now let's talk about some Hall of Fame birthdays for this November 6th, and we'll start off in the year 1914. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Abe Daniel, a tackle from the University of Pittsburgh, was born. Per the NFF, Daniel played for the Panthers from 1934 through the 1936 seasons and made the team as a walk-on candidate. Utilizing his quickness and aggressive spirit, Daniel overshadowed many of the great linemen of his day. And in 1936, Daniel's senior season, the Panther captain became a consensus All-American selection as a leader of what many feel is the best line in Pitt history. The National Football Foundation elected to induct Abe Daniel into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1975. And after school, Abe was in the National Football League for the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Green Bay Packers. November 6, 1916, Mount Clemens, Michigan, the great halfback from Michigan State, John Pingle, celebrated his birth. Pingle was a triple threat as his precision passing, outstanding rushes, and his punting helped MSU achieve an 8-1 record in 1937. In fact, the footballfoundation.org site claims that he averaged 5.1 yards per rushing attempt, completed 54% of his passes, and led the nation in punting that season. John received accolades and awards for being the top-ranked student athlete at the school and even gained All-American status on the gridiron in 1937. Those are many of his reasons that John Pingle was accepted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1968. November 6, 1946, Youngstown, Ohio. Eddie DiBartolo Jr., the former owner of the San Francisco 49ers, was born. DiBartolo purchased the franchise in 1977 and held ownership of the club for 23 years. And in that time, his 49ers played in 16 playoff games. 10 of those were NFC Championship games, and they won 5 Super Bowl championships, per the Pro Football Hall of Fame bio on Edward. The franchise posted its best winning percentage in the NFL in both the decades of the 1980s and 90s, and DiBartolo was named the NFL Man of the Year by the Football News in 1989 as recognition as the nation's top sports executives. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Edward DiBartolo Jr. in the year 2016. November 6, 1968, Houston, Texas. It's a day when the fantastic University of Colorado linebacker Alfred Big Al Williams came into the world. Big Al was a 1990 Buckus Award winner as the nation's top linebacker, per his bio on the NFL's website. Williams led the Colorado Buffs to the 1990 National Championship, and he set the Colorado record for career sacks at 35 and became a 1990 unanimous first-team All-American linebacker. The National Football Foundation elected to induct Al Williams into their College Football Hall of Fame in 2010, and after school, he was a linebacker and a defensive end for the Cincinnati Bengals, San Francisco 49ers, and the Denver Broncos. November 6, 1976, here's a special one. Fremont, California, another great player who was inducted into College Football Hall of Fame in 2010, was born on this day too. Pat Tillman, who played as a linebacker at Arizona State University, secured the last remaining scholarship for the ASU team in 1994. Tillman excelled as a linebacker at Arizona State, and despite being relatively small for the position, 5'11" tall, and after the 1997 season, Pat was voted as the Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year, as well as also being named as Arizona State's MVP of the season, and finished his college career with 230 tackles. The NFF goes on to tell us that Tillman was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals as a safety in the 1998 NFL Draft, and Pat ended up spending 4 seasons with the Cards before being inspired to join the U.S. Army. Tillman was a U.S. Army Ranger, served tours in Iraq in 2003 and 2004 before he was tragically killed. Tillman was posthumously honored with the NFF's Distinguished American Award in 2006, and Pat Tillman Foundation was established in his name to promote scholarship, the spirit of community service, and supporting veterans, active service members, and their dependents. Now that's some great football history there. The days don't get better, much better, than November 6th with all these great Hall of Fame birthdays. The very first collegiate football game was considered by many being there on that day, and so many other great activities. Hope you enjoyed it. We're sure enjoyed having you here today and listening in on this great football history. If you have any comments or feedback, we'd like to hear from you. PigskinDispatch@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at PigskinDispatch. And don't forget, Sports History Network, you can find us along with 24 other great podcasters. And don't forget to check out our site, PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history. Until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's 4th and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.